Welcome to The Landing, a senior living community offering assisted living as well as memory care for its residents, and they're pleased to announce they'll be opening this month. So if you're looking for the perfect place to retire as you reach your golden years, or you're taking care of loved ones, contact The Landing. Go to landingsl.com.
From the Midas of Roseburg studio, KQEN weather forecast. Today, sunny and a high near 88 degrees. Tonight, clear and 54 for a low. Tomorrow, sunny and 86. Thursday, sunny and 87. And by Friday, sunny and 90 degrees. It's 75 degrees now. KQEN news time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, and thanks for being here today. State Representative Cedric Hayden checking in with us. I know this time of year, you could be found just about anywhere. Where are you located today?
Well, today I'm just north of the California border, kind of hanging out at a rest stop here, waiting on a permit. I will tell you one thing that Oregon does good is getting fire dispatch or fire emergency permits out to get machinery moved around the state. They've got emergency number for that, and they do very quickly at it. We have been waiting almost a day now for a permit to get down into California to help them out with a fire down there. So anyway, that's what I'm doing, hanging out here, kind of waiting on paperwork.
Talk about, speaking of government, talk about Oregon's response to COVID-19. I mean, we've had 5 months of this. How would you grade Salem overall?
Well, I would probably give them a C. One thing that I think Oregon didn't respond good enough on, and this isn't just Oregon. When this COVID originally came to the U.S. and there was a realization that, hey, this is an issue in Washington, of course, it started in our convalescent care centers or senior homes, senior care centers. And if you look at the data in Oregon, you know, that kind of trend came to Oregon, and it was really pronounced in New York. But it happened here in Oregon, and our Oregon Health Authority didn't immediately, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but didn't report a breakdown of where these COVID cases and COVID deaths were. So I think that we didn't respond, why it gave us a C, we didn't respond good enough specific to the data that we had at the time. And I know we were continuing to learn on this, but we knew that these senior facilities were a area of high concern. And we kind of did a blanket across the state, one size fits all, and didn't pay enough attention to that. And we had a couple of senior facilities in Oregon that had some really bad outcomes with their COVID cases.
What about areas where the state needs to improve as we continue through these COVID times?
Well, you know, I think that we still have a problem. You know, the senior living centers is still an area that we need to improve, and in my opinion, that we need to be paying more attention to that. But I would have liked to seen more input from our local leaders. I know in Douglas County, we had multiple epidemiologists involved with that, involved with dealing with the COVID, and some really high level input coming in. Yet all this stuff mostly came through executive order. And so I would like to see across the state more local input on how they could have handled it rather than kind of a overall one size fits all approach.
So are there particular areas, though, where maybe more improvement is needed?
Well, if you look at your cases, you know, as far as more improvement, as far as regulation, you mean, like in metropolitan area where a lot of our cases are at, a little more concentration with some of the mandates going on there, might make more sense than off somewhere in rural Oregon.
And I think that's been one of the constant things that as people look at this, because Oregon has one of the lowest attack rates in the nation. Places like Douglas County have one of the lowest in Oregon. And it probably, as people are generally staying closer to home right now, it's a little hard to imagine what some of the conditions are like in some of the larger locations, and then also wonder why some of the requirements or rules are the same for bigger places with lots of people and rural places with small amounts.
Yeah, and, you know, for COVID reasons or other reasons, I haven't even been to metropolitan area since this COVID stuff started. So, you know, I've stayed home, you know, until fire season hit, and we travel with that. But we still have our protocols that we have to do because that's is working for the federal government. And so we still have a COVID protocol that we have to follow with these dispatch orders also.
Is there enough money going from the state level down to the counties for COVID-19 response?
You know, this last week, I was part of a letter to the governor's office, and I know this has been a big concern in Douglas County, and Lane County has been asking the governor, basically where that stands is there was a couple hundred million dollars that went out to help the local level, and then a commitment for another couple hundred million dollars. And then there was supposed to be about $614 million altogether, but that last $214 million has been diverted. And so just recently, I had joined a letter to support more of the funds, or the funds that were supposed to go to help the local communities, local governments, when we received that $1.6 billion from the federal government that was set aside for those. But they've kind of used some formulas, and the emergency board has used their own discretion to heavily weight that back to metropolitan area. And so we're trying to, you know, some of it hasn't been spent, so we're trying to get more of the funds that were intended to go to the county level, more equally.
And are there guidelines that have come down from the federal government for the state to use in determining what these resources could be used for, or is it more at the discretion of the counties once it gets to them?
Well, there's, and that's part of the reason that, you know, at the state level, the money comes in. I think the intentions were there for it to drive down at the county level, and the county level is supposed to be using it specifically for COVID-related activities. But I mean, what is that, right? That's pretty pretty broad. When COVID comes in and completely shuts down your economy, it's a pretty broad sweeping coverage of what's happening out there, what falls under COVID. So I think, you know, as the federal government pushed these funds out, they were trying to get it there more quickly than regulated. So it really ends up being a state level decision.
What about schools? We've seen constantly shifting messages from Salem regarding schools as the pandemic evolves. What do you think districts should be doing as a school year begins?
Well, I think that we haven't done, and this kind of ties in with your first question also, I don't think that we've done enough as far as research, or at least including the effects of COVID. So what is the effect on children in Oregon if we don't have school, right? They're just looking at it from the standpoint of here's the COVID effect, but what's the effect if we don't have these activities, if we don't have schools? And there is more discussion about that, you know, as far as we see an increase depression rates and drug use and suicide rates and things like that that have been attributed to COVID. So I think that our schools, again, should have a little more control at the local level so that the local school boards can make safe, appropriate decisions. Like you talked about, Douglas County having one of the best rates, if you will, as far as COVID infections and how they've been able to handle that and track that. And so I would like to see schools reopen safely. I think it's important for students to have that interaction. And I think there is a downside to not having, just as in the medical field, to not having healthcare services outside of COVID is a downside. Not having structure of school is a downside to our students.
As the school year begins, in some cases this week or for most next week, there's different models, different size districts doing different things. But one of the things a lot of parents are concerned about is whether it's going to shift from, for instance, online to in-person to maybe back to online. And for working parents, especially single-parent families or folks in occupations where you can't just bring the kid to your office, that is posing a lot of challenges.
It is. And, the daycare, I serve on the task force for child care, a lot of challenges in and around that, being able to access child care. And so, there's just a lot of ramifications of not having a school structure. And I believe that it can be done safely. Okay, I'll turn my CB down there. I believe that it can be done safely, but I think that we need to take a hard look at doing everything that we can to have that structure in place. So parents and students can get back to some normalcy.
All right, going to take a break at Inside Douglas County. More when we come back with State Representative Cedric Hayden. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. Inside Douglas County, a presentation of Concrete Builder Supply at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Lars Larson coming at 1, KQEN, Local Talk at 4. David Littlejohn and Katie Shook with True Wealth Radio. And on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County, the Association of Oregon Counties has put out a response to remarks made last Friday by Governor Kate Brown. But Douglas County commissioners say they're on a little different path than the ideas coming from the AOC. We'll explore that tomorrow with County Commissioner Chris Boyce on the program. And don't forget, Thursday and Friday, two special shows with Dan Bain, about to retire after a multi-decade career in radio, television, and newspapers here in Douglas County. So a Dan Bain special feature Thursday and Friday. State Representative Cedric Hayden with us this afternoon, covering a lot of things related to COVID-19 and the state response. The school years are now beginning, or these school years beginning. What about funding? There are a lot of things where it appears districts are having to come up with a lot of money. I know Roseburg bought a lot of desks, the superintendent tells us, to make social distancing easier than tables. There's been other expenses, face shields, etc. Where are districts getting the money, and is the state helping them out enough?
Well, this last short session, or second special session, I guess they officially call it, we did go through the budget there, and one of the things that we did do in that budget was to basically hold the school budget harmless, or hold that at an additional $9 billion. There's still some local property taxes and stuff that go into the school budget on top of that. That's the general fund, or the state side of it, that goes into that. So they didn't cut that. They were able to hold that with using some rainy day funds for the schools. Now, there has been additional expenses, and so they're going to have to, I guess the schools are going to have to balance those additional expenses. And then the governor has come out recently and said, well, it doesn't look like we're going to have schools for at least 200 days to meet the metrics that they're wanting to see. And so then, it goes back to that virtual. And so is there cost savings in that? I really don't know the inside of the local school district budgets and how they're going to be able to handle that. But the state level has maintained the budgeting level where it was before, where pretty much all of the other agencies have taken some significant cuts.
Now, I know there was a concern that some superintendents have mentioned back really earlier in the summer as they started to look ahead to this fall. is when you, if you go back to having students in school, some kind of legal ruling or some kind of bill from the legislature that protects school districts if cases of COVID-19 begin in their district and then you start having parents and others wanting to sue the school districts. Has any of that gotten worked out?
You know, we, when I say we, the Republican caucus side has pushed really hard to have some sort of liability, some sort of limit to the legal process as related to COVID for school districts, for mom and pop businesses, you know, so things can get back to some realistic normalcy for these businesses. Now, having said that, you know, as long as they're following some safety protocols, we really do need some liability for them. We have not been able to achieve that through the legislative process. Again, these special sessions, the bills are written by either Peter Courtney or Tina Kotek is the way that they come out. And we don't have the ability to write bills or have bills drafted. We can try and get amendments in, but that hasn't been very successful. And so we just haven't been able to get there. And I think it is something that we're really missing from healthcare to education to business, having something. You know, so as we refer to the ambulance chasing lawyer type approach, we don't want that with COVID.
What about the area of unemployment? The federal level has made an offer to continue some expanded unemployment benefits partially if states will pay part of it themselves, but states have to apply. Where's Oregon in this program?
Well, unemployment or the employment office in Oregon has been a huge disappointment as a lawmaker, as somebody that's concerned about the constituents and the families, you know, throughout the state of Oregon. When the government steps in and shuts your ability down to have a job or work at a job, and then have the employment office not being able to process those unemployment claims. We are still, my office is still going through many, many of those, working on a couple of hundred. Recently, you saw that through the last short session, they approved, I think it was $35 million or $7,500 payments to go out to folks. But even that wasn't handled very well. You know, if you weren't able to, you know, go down and stand in line for 3 hours to your local credit union or however they had that set up, you know, you didn't get that. And so I've just been really disappointed with that. And then the state from the financial side wanting to disconnect from the federal side of the COVID. And I don't know where we stand as far as the unemployment office being able to connect with the additional $300 that the federal government has done. But I do know that we haven't been able to process these claims, and we weren't able to, at least yet, weren't able to get that first week that many other states were able to get to folks. So pretty disappointing from the unemployment agency.
Well, I know we've still been hearing from people who have yet to get unemployment, even though they started applying in late March or early April, sometimes never getting through or thinking that they've got a claim and never getting the money. Or in some cases, having, you know, 8-10 checks show up all at once.
Yeah, and we've been working through that. We have had, you know, I've got a ton of very heartfelt thank yous for you know, the hard work that my staff and I have gone through to try and help these folks. We have helped quite a few people, and there have been some successes with that. But the response is just really slow, and then they'll get, you know, like three checks here and then a gap for 2 or 3 weeks and then another check, and there just doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason why that's happening for them. And, you know, we try and help them track it, but, you know, I don't have a silver bullet for it either. And it's still going on. It's still happening. You know, one thing in the second short session, they did try and put all the public employees, they tried to make a new policy or a new standard so the public employees that applied for unemployment wouldn't be vetted. They would just be immediately approved. you know, and put those folks or that category of folks in front of everybody else. And so I was glad to see that that didn't actually end up turning into law, because, you know, that's just a fairness issue that I didn't want to see happen. But it still doesn't solve the problem for these folks out there that are still waiting. And there are still folks out there waiting. We're still getting a lot of phone calls and emails about that issue.
As a lawmaker, what kinds of things are you working on headed into the fall? And how different is this summer, this time of year, going into election season during this COVID-19 time?
So as we mentioned before, I'm on a couple of task force. I was just on for a few hours this last week on a task force. It's called the 77 or the 770 Universal Healthcare Task Force. And so very diverse group about how they want to move forward. And Patrick Allen, who's the department head of the Oregon Health Authority, and then some folks from the governor's office, you know, talking about trying to expand healthcare, but at the same time saying there is going to be huge cuts in healthcare. And so trying to find that balance and figure out what services that we can provide without, you know, they call it cutting the line. It just means the codes that are covered under the healthcare process. So I work a lot in that arena. Vice Chair of Healthcare just met, and then wrapping up the governor's behavioral healthcare recommendations. The committee already wrapped up, but the folks wanted to continue and get their recommendations on the governor's desk, and so that's just wrapping up. So that's what I've been working on.
And what are you hearing about another special session?
Mid-September is what I'm hearing, but I don't have a date on that yet, and I don't know what that agenda will be. My preference would not be to turn legislative days into special sessions and just go back into legislative days and prep for the 2021 session rather than having all of these stacking up of all these really short sessions.
All right, State Representative Cedric Hayden, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thanks, Kyle. I always appreciate the opportunity.
1258 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.